Right, we're here for another episode of Counterpoints. And listen, here's the thing, Maniac, especially because there's no, like, sponsor for this episode. Let's not do the whole, like, build-up. And let's just dive straight into it, because I actually thought there's something that no one even bothered mentioning, Maniac, that is so fucking banter. Like, I was actually almost crying laughing when I was thinking of it. Which is, if you go and look, guys, obviously Maniac was part of one of the best pieces of ESL content they've made over the last few years, where they did a skit, which, by the way, insane props to both Maniac, especially Zeebo, by the way, because they did a skit where the skit is like a really exaggerated version of what people like me say about Zeebo. Like, you know, the idea is like a fraud, or, you know, you just like can't ever do it on the big stage or whatever. And they did a whole skit around that theme, which is really cool, by the way, because even when people do, like, you know, jokes that like jab at Nico, they're usually ones that are from like so many years ago. Like, you know, he's already gotten past those, and like, you know, something of like him saying shut up and like mouse in 2016. Like, the Zeebo ones, in theory, guys, are current. It's going on. And then this is the punchline I can't even believe, which is that video came out a day before the final, where he actually did do, just on the last map, he did do literally the kind of game that would have been in that skit. And the best part is, I was even thinking, that even is the meme about you, Maniac, that if he has a bad game, you have to go on the desk like, right, the defense has prepared its case. Like, that almost is the meme, like, it just set you up completely. But to be fair, it's just coincidence, but it was pretty funny. I just thought, like, that just immediately came to our mind when that final happened, because I was like, didn't they release that yesterday? Because that's also, like, fair play that they actually, like, did it recently as well. So, yeah.
Well, this is how crazy it was, like, in terms of the timing of the content release. That video was played out after, I think, I don't know if it was map one or map two of Vitality smacking the head out of Spirit.
Right.
So you can imagine how much of a high I was on. Like, I was on a mega high. Sure. Like, the world, like, the birds were singing, the sun was out, everything was great, this content comes out. And I'm like, ha, psych, bitch. And you can retweet and all that. And so obviously after the Spirit game, everything was great. But then, you know, in life, you win some, you lose some. You have good days, you have bad days.
Yes.
And then everything went great until this third map of the grand final. And then I thought, I even went to the desk and I just said, well, I'm going to have a lot of work as a lawyer now. There's going to be some more charges coming my way. So, I mean, props to yourself for coming up with these ideas. And I think the only way this works, this kind of skit, is if you really embrace it. I just went in and I thought, okay, you know what? I'm actually going to be the lawyer. Let's do it. And I had a ton of fun behind this tragic, tragic reality that happened in Dallas.
By the way, on the more serious note, right, let's just start right there, the most obvious topic, just because even though you've had many of these discussions, obviously you've mentioned yourself, since fans are always trying. If people don't know, the problem Maniac has is he's actually also, like, I'll give an analogy that people aren't going to understand initially. He's actually in a similar position Pimp was for many years, which is because Pimp's Danish, people assumed automatically Pimp will be just insanely biased to Astralis on every topic. But that also meant if he ever actually disagreed with, like, the sort of consensus on Astralis or what Danish fans thought, then all the Danish fans attacked him and were like, what the hell are you, loyal? Like, you don't think Astralis is good? So basically, he was going to get wrecked either way. So if you don't know, one of the reasons why Maniac himself often mentions on social media, for example, his thoughts or like some sort of contextual framing to why he thinks something about Zeebo, is because he either gets people telling him, you're just biased, you just think he's the best or whatever. But then the second you ever critique him and actually say, like, oh, you did have a bad game there, you probably should play better, then all the Zeebo fans are like, what the hell? You're like, you're hating on him. It's like, so you're always on the hot seat, aren't you? It's a tricky one, isn't it, Maniac? It is. It's a tricky one.
No, you're absolutely right. But the only line of defense I have is that I will never go and say something that I don't stand behind.
Right.
Like, that's just the line I draw. Right? And it comes with some W's and it comes with some L's. That's just the way it is. I'm never going to cater to a crowd. I just don't do that. So I think this is the only way to make it work long term.
Sure.
And this is the only way I can fully embrace when something great happens, the likes of the FaZe and Astralis game at EPL, I will fully embrace it. The Spirit game, I'll fully embrace it. But then when shit hits the fan, then I owe it to myself, to the fans, to the community, to actually be objective about what's happening. Like, there is nothing worse. There's nothing worse about seeing someone going to the desk and doing like some cognitive coping mechanism not to criticize.
Sure.
Someone. This is the worst. This is the absolute worst. If I ever do that, I want everyone to call me out on it. Like, if I'm not capable of going to the desk and say, yeah, well, actually, he fucked up, and this is what happened, and this is why that's not okay. If I'm not capable of doing that, people need to call me out, because I think I despise it. I despise it when we do it. So that's the line I walk. Let me know. I don't think the fan really liked it when I predicted Spirit to win against Vitality, and I have no regret for that prediction.
I think it was reasonable. Yeah.
I mean, at the time, based on what we had seen from Spirit, the build-up, the fact that Don't was once again unleashed, all of them seemed online, their games was beautiful. I covered most of them in the group stage. On the other hand, you have Vitality, who very seemingly are far from being at their top. They lose to 9Z in a best of three, and I see this clash coming up, and I'm just thinking, okay, my hypothesis is that Spirit is going to deliver the same Counter-Strike we've seen them in playoffs. They've done it in Katowice. There's no reason to change that. Vitality is a bit iffy. Well, whether I like it or not, I think it's a Spirit win. And I was obviously wrong. We are yet to figure out like who Spirit is at the very, very, very top level, right? It's not like they have a million stages being played. But that's just one of the examples. Like, yes. I mean, a little bit for the meme is cool. And I think it's great if I'm at the desk and I show a bit of personality and a bit of love for Zywoo and Vitality.
I mean, as you say, you can do it jokingly in the same way as Yanko, yes. Like we all joke he's biased to Nico or Kassad or someone. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's all right. I think that's all right. But I still need to be able to stand by what I say and not just fucking do the ostrich and put my hand in the sand and, you know, say, oh, Vitality is the best team in the world. And No. I don't want to do any of that. I think the desk would lose all this flavor.
By the way, a couple of things on that. We'll do the Spirit thing in a second, obviously. But in terms of the actual angle that Zywoo obviously was kind of shit on that last map, and if he wasn't, they would have won the tournament. Like, that's just the reality. Like, they would have won IEM Dallas. I mean, it wouldn't even have been that much bigger a game. He just had to sort of, like, turn up a little bit. He just kind of, that was unfortunately, like, he just fizzled out at the end of the tournament, right? The problem I have with this topic goes like this, Maniac. If people don't know, this is also where people have really misunderstood my position. They think I'm just, like, anti-Zywoo, right? But actually, my problem on this specific topic is I'm actually probably a lot more favourable to what Zywoo fans think on the topic of like how good is he at the moment, because if you ever go and look, it's like a lot of people have started to notice that like the current Zywoo has like a trend that's a bit different from the old one. The old one used to be the guy where I would actually say the reason why he wasn't considered like the same, not like level, but the same like iconic player that Simple was, is because Simple's style was like the best frag movie style ever. It was like, you know, like the joke is he would go for like a 1v3 that you should probably save the AWP on, and then he wouldn't even just do it like a normal round. He would like to try to like shotgun AWP a guy here and then do a 180 on someone. The kind of shit Monacy does now where you're just like, I guess you can just do that if you're the best player, right? Zywoo back in the day to me was the guy where it's more like, it was that meme of like, you think he isn't having a great game, then when they hit the scoreboard, you're like, how's he got 20 kills? And then you realize he's just got like two boring kills every round, and you never had the 4K, so you're like, you didn't think there was a big pop off, but then you realize, ah, oh, that's just how good this guy is. Like his base level is to just get like 20 kills basically. Whereas actually the modern day Zywoo, people have seen, he's actually had loads of games where he started like he was going to flog the game and he'll be like, you know, fucking like 3 for 9 or something like that. But then what he'll do is, as long as Vitality doesn't get knocked out, he'll just have like an insane streak of rounds for like 5-6 rounds at the end. By the way, he usually closes the map out if they're still in the game, but he'll just go like, you know, like fucking 13-4 or something over the last 5 rounds, and then he goes ham. And so in a way, right, I don't mind it totally, because first of all, he actually has that super ability where he can just pick himself out of the fire, whereas I think most players can't do that. You know, like why people go on about confidence, momentum and all that shit, because everyone wants to start well and then be in the right frame of mind and then know how you're working and see all the jazz that applies to normal people. So my problem is this, right? I do think there is an argument to be made that like, it's not like you only focus on the final or whatever match they lose in and then go, right, well, if you're bad in that game, then you're just a fraud and you weren't good. It's like, because at the end of the day, if he's getting the numbers he's getting, that actually implies he's carrying so hard in the other games. Like every group stage, basically, just shitting on everyone completely. And he is, by the way. Everyone's seen some of these series. He's having series where the numbers are completely bonkers, where every time he does it, everyone who's a Zywoo fan understandably goes, he's still the best player in the world. And that's why the discussion exists of him. If Donk plays enough, Donk and Morrissey, it's actually quite a good convo, isn't it? Especially now that they can all win tournaments. So whenever that happens, right, I feel like the Zywoo fan just goes like head in the sand. Like, doesn't matter what happened in that final or that semi or whatever. Like, look at the overall numbers, which is like, well, it does still matter. Like, if you want to be the best player in the world and the best of all time, you got to also do it in the big matches. But I also feel like the hater then, just like I say, only tunnels in on the bad game, and it's like, no, see, and it's like, bro, when you say that someone's a fraud, like that other stuff did happen. Like we did see those games in the group stage. Like, we've seen those games in like quarters and semis. Those were real matches. Like we didn't imagine them. So where are you at in this particular topic, Mania? Because to me, you still have to put this guy in the conversation for best player, even if you want to pick at holes. Because we're having two different conversations, right? We're asking, is someone like the absolute best player to ever play CS ever? Well, obviously, the standard's going to be pretty bonkers for that. We're asking, is someone extremely good right now? Where are you at on this topic? Because I feel like there's a lot of a lot of emotion around this one.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, for me, it's pretty emotionally packed as well, because I'm never going to pretend like I'm unbiased, right? I have a, I wouldn't say I have a friendship with the guy. That's not even true. Like, we bump into each other, we talk, but I genuinely just care about the character. Like, okay. So I am a little bit biased when it comes to the character. That's just a fact. People know about it. There's no need to pretend. But I still try to remain objective in, like, the current situation. And I think he's done enough this year to be in the conversation of best player in the world currently, but I don't think he's the front runner. I think he's barely done enough to stay alive. I think Katowice being the fail that it had been, and unfortunately the health issues he's got at the major, which we will never really know impacted, that's hard to see.
Sure.
I think when you fail, and I'm using that word with air quote, but when you fail Katowice in the major, thus you cannot just be the front runner, not currently. I don't think that's enough. These were really three complicated months. So I think he's done enough to maintain the conversation between Donk, Manessi, and himself. I think Manessi is probably the front runner right now. If I really, like, gun to my head, if I really had to choose someone, I'm sure we'll talk about Spirit later down the road. But the problem I have with Zai was the following. I agree with you. I know that the haters do absolutely tunnel vision. Like, the haters take a map, and from that map, they extrapolate their argument. And if you do that with the grand final of Dallas, your theory is absolutely solid. Like, this is a perfect example. Because you can construct this idea in your mind that, hey, the pressure was going up towards the grand final, and as the third map arrives around the corner, this is where the pressure is at the maximum, and this is where he disappears. So it all makes sense. He's fragile. He's weak mentally. He disappears from game. He can't stand the pressure. I think that's one angle. But I talked to him in Dallas on the Sunday night after the grand final, and I just very genuinely, very kindly, I just looked him in the eye and I said, hey, like, were you stressed? Was that an intense moment? And he genuinely just told me, no, I wasn't. And I didn't feel like he lied to me.
Okay.
He had no reason to lie to me. Like, I wasn't coming up to him as, like, a fucking fanboy, or I wasn't annoying him or anything. It was like a very respectful conversation. I just said, hey, like, you know what happened? There was this interesting tweet that someone put out, and I'm not going to be capable of referencing it because I forgot the user, but someone basically pointed out that the CT side of Zaiwu recently has been the places where he's got the worst ratings he's ever had in his career. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, there's two ways to go about it. You can either say this was the third map of the grand final, so pressure got to him and that's messed up. Or you can say, is it just because, like, what the fuck is he currently doing on that CT side of Nuke? And this is not to say that he's absconded of responsibility. I personally think when you're as good as he is, you should never be in any game plan that isn't made for you in any way. That's my personal take. But I'm honestly not sure. We've talked about it in extenso in a couple of podcasts where I do think he probably will let a negative atmosphere get to him. I think that's the case, and that's probably one of the reasons why he can maybe disappear in these moments. But I actually don't know if that's all there is to the story. I think it might be just a little bit reductionist to just say that, oh, when the pressure is high up, he disappears. Because if you actually go and you look at his records and you look at some of the events that he's performed on stages with thousands of people watching him against the best teams as well, like, there is a body of work where he actually delivers. Like,
oh, of course, yeah.
Full finals against FaZe, world final as well.
Dude, one thing that tilts me is I was one of the first people who came with this angle that, like, Siwoo often... I never even said he's bad, bro. I've never ever even said... I just said he underperforms in, like, playoff games in prestige tournaments. Remember, I said it was prestige tournaments. People took that and they took all the extra info. They just took it as Siwoo sucks in every playoff game, which is like, what? Bro, that's such a... Where I started was pretty bold in itself. You take that like a million miles, guys. Yeah. Like...
Exactly. But there is such an argument to be made in, like, the lack of success he's had in Katowice, Cologne.
Sure. And yeah.
Very unfortunately for them, their major run had nothing historical to it.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing historical to it. And this isn't to say that they would not have beaten better teams.
Oh, no, of course not.
Maybe they could have. But as it stands, it doesn't give you enough to just say, ha, you know, he's done it. It's more like, well, they had to beat these teams. And, of course, he's tied on everybody, and that's great. But that doesn't alleviate any of that pressure. So, unfortunately, when I don't think I am equipped to prove people wrong about the fact that he can choke in these moments. I'm not. I don't think I have what's needed.
No, it's not possible. Yeah, of course.
But I do wonder if there's more to it than that. When all his teammates always just say, you know what, he's not really bothered by anything. He's just played Counter-Strike. What if that was true? Like, what if he actually just plays Counter-Strike and just like, not even robotically, but just like generally, organically just plays the game and is goddamn good at it and that's it. Then there might be some other elements to be looking at. And again, as I said, he bears a fuck ton of responsibility in that. Like, I think it is criminal for me to hear that he isn't exactly comfortable in whatever's happening right now. Like, this should never be the case.
And I've even got an angle for people. I'll spin an angle for people that they might not have thought of as well, which is people are also, because you notice like almost all these conversations can't escape the like fucking gravity pull of the conversation of, is he the GOAT or is he like the best player ever? Because if that's constantly what's having to like impinge or drag at every single statement we make, then it makes the conversation so much more difficult. And it sounds like you're just flaming him. So I'll give you an example right now of the first thing I think of when I see this happen, which is, right, everyone else then does the thing where if they're a Zewu fan, they just start trying to hate on all of his teammates and be like, look, they're not that good either. But it's like, the reason that's not fair, guys, is because if you go and look at nearly all these finals or semis that they've failed, it's not that the teammates played great, but they almost certainly would have won the match if Zewu played better. That's the problem. So on that one, you have to ask for more from Zewu. But I will say this though, which is, let's say this is just like a thing that happens, like you say, like he's not someone who's like obsessed with the game and thinking all the time. He's just a guy who just plays. Sometimes he has bad games, sometimes he has good games. If that's true, then I can tell you this right now is one of the things that's really irritating. If you ever follow the sport of basketball at the moment, I know it's like your shit in the NBA, but like in the NBA, there's a massive culture on the internet now of fans who do the same discussion. They just talk every day of like who's better, like Michael Jordan or LeBron James or whoever the fuck they want, right? They do these contrasts, but all they ever do is compare stats, and they do that thing where they act like you're just like, it's a one-on-one sport. As like, well, if he played him, then he'd do that. And so they do this whole thing, right, where they've conflated the idea of being clutch or like a big game player, as we say in our game. They've just conflated that with being the best player, because in their particular case, Michael Jordan happened to also be all those things and the best player. So what they don't seem to understand is you could actually be the best player and not be the guy who closes the fucking game every time. Like, I mean, if people don't know, I would even say that like, there have actually been some very, very great players in Counter-Strike history who weren't even necessarily that great in the clutch. They just did all the other frags in the game. Like, they get the first three kills in the game for you, or they kill all the people in the middle of a round for you, whatever it might be. I mean, I'll give you an obvious example. To me, it would be Forrest. Like, Forrest's whole shit is, like, early on in the game, or taking a duel with someone. Like, get right to the one who closed the game. Like, Exist wins the clutch, right? You know what I mean? So what I would say is this. Another angle you can also take, if you are Vitality, is get a fucking big game player in. Get in, like, a Rain-type player or some Yimpat-type. Put some guy who does win clutches and wins under pressure, etc. Something to just relieve some of the pressure on Zewu, you know, or keep you in a game, you know. Because I do think that's the area where I blame the teammates of Zewu. Is a lot of them actually aren't that experienced, as I pointed out on some past episodes, or they're just people like, I mean, Spinks has his own issues in this sense. Like, the real problem I think right now is this. Spinks and Zewu have sort of some similar problems, which is they look so fucking good right until the match they don't, Maniac, and then they just go so hard in that match that you, but if it ever happens to both of them, you get these insane matches where you're just like, why were they supposed to win? They couldn't win.
I wouldn't put Zywoo and Spinks in the same category. I think Spinks is worse than that. Like, I've been harsh on him.
Sure.
But if you actually go and you look...
So he doesn't have the same scrutiny on him, so people just don't notice.
He doesn't have, but you have to realize, like, he was named, like, the fifth best player in the world last year. And sure. I don't think he's anywhere near that. I do think that Spinks, whenever they're playing, like, group stage games and all, he has an incredible ability to bash people. Like, holy shit, he's going to farm the hell out of, like, easy games and all. But if you are looking through the microscope of, hey, this is not a playoff game, are you ready to stand up? He actually does have an inability to perform at his best in grand moments. And again, this is like, for me, it's always a complicated conversation, because if I go on a desk and I have this sort of argument, it's going to be very easy for me or for people to tell me, you're just trying to defend Zywoo. Like, this is all you're doing here. Like, sure. you're just coping here. It's got nothing to do with it. Two arguments can coexist and be valid at once. Like, they're not mutually exclusive. You can say Zywoo disappears at times in extremely important moments, which we have witnessed in Dallas. And you can say he's got another star player with him that notoriously fails to perform his best Counter-Strike. These two statements are not mutually exclusive. And this is where it really hurts, because just as much as I cannot make this third map of Dallas go away and believe you me, the Zywoo hater will never. They probably already printed it and have it as like a t-shirt in their room or something. But now, imagine Inferno if Sphinx actually plays Counter-Strike. This is a 2-0. The game is over. It's a 2-0 with Zywoo having probably at the time 1.4 rating in the grand final. You snap it in 2-0 and the entire story is different.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God, this was it. This was the tournament. Zywoo bested Dong. Which, by the way, made him look like a kid at the time. Bested Dong. Goes on against Monacy. He triumphs with all his foes. Wow, what an event. Full arena, thousands of people, 100th IM. Like, this was right there. It was right there. And, okay, well, you mess up Inferno. Sphinx has a couple of incredible failures, incredible moments where he's like, he's basically a lurking, which is the equivalent of a fucking fish being in a sea, exactly where you're supposed to be. Cannot convert some of these kills that are gifted to him. So, all right, you go to Nuke, and then Nuke goes to shit, and Zywoo disappears, and that's a reality. But then it's hard to not play the game of what if. Like, what if that third map hadn't happened? And this is where it gets really complicated to separate things, because you cannot make it sound like it wasn't here. But also, holy shit, like, wouldn't that have been great to just close it in two? I don't know. I'm a bit conflicted with that. And you were mentioning also about the clutch situation, you know, how to use it. This is the one thing where if you pay attention to like Zywoo's T side and CT side, this is where like the starkest difference is going to come out, the starkest contrast. Zywoo's rating on the T side are much better now because he finally has stopped giving his life away just to find an opening for his team when they're struggling. Thank God. I've been asking for it for so long. Because you would see Vitality at times in the past being a little bit sort of in shackles, not exactly knowing how to win T rounds. And so Zywoo would just do the selfless thing, which is, okay, I'm capable of finding this one for one. No one really is. Let me go first. I'll find the kill. I'll be traded. And he would end up the half with like 10-10 or 11-10 scoreline, whatever. Now he lets people go first. Like, oh, you go ahead. You give me the entry. You give me the trade. I'll be playing these clutch situations. So on the T side, I really feel like he's figured out. Like he has figured out, or Vitality has figured out, or both parts have figured out where he's supposed to be to have the maximum output. This is great. That's a W. That's a success. I love it. Now, I feel like that thought process has to be put onto the CT side. And you mentioned Monacy, and I swear to God, Monacy is the best example of how you can utilize someone's talents on a CT side. Holy shit, G2 have absolutely... I mean, it's not just G2. Monacy is part of that process, but they have completely masterminded. Like, what kind of setups do we need to have? How much movement does he need to have? Where can he go? When can he go there? How do we rotate around him? They've completely nailed it. Like, it's beautiful to see, and he delivers all the time.
Sure. By the way, if we flip, let's do a bit about Spirit then. Because there's like two angles on the Spirit thing. To me, it's the Donk angle, and then Spirit is an overall team. So on the Donk angle, right, I'm going to flip it a little bit to people, which is, even though this might sound like... Did you watch the Dune Part 2, Maniac? Did you watch that film, The Villeneuve One?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
All right, basically, there's a joke that they put in that I forget if it's even in the book, where basically it's a bit like the old Monty Python joke, where in the Life of Brian, where it's like parodying the life of Jesus, you know, there's a bit where he sort of says, like, you know, I'm not the Messiah or whatever, and then they say, like, oh, he's so humble, like, oh, that proves he's the Messiah even more because he says he's not. And it's like, you realize it's like a tautology, like that logic basically means they were going to say that no matter what, right? So even though it's going to sound like I'm doing that now, guys, I'm actually not. I'm trying to make a very shrewd point, which is, I actually do think this was easily the worst event I've seen from Donk. And I do think actually that match against Vitality, he actually did get sunned. Like, he didn't live up to the billing. Like, the idea that this was going to be Zywoo versus Donk, you know, for best player in the world, then the winner of that versus what? Well, it never happened in terms of the Donk part. Like, Donk just didn't turn up with his game. It's quite underwhelming. Obviously, it was a big stage match. By the way, he could have probably won his team this match if he'd have turned up. I'll give the same logic I would have given as to Zywoo a minute ago. But as much as he didn't play well, if that's him playing bad, and that's what a bad game looks like, this guy is unbelievably cracked out. I know people are going to go, it's such cope, though. It's like, it isn't, though. Guys, like, this actually was, like, if this is the flaw, and this isn't going to happen, like, every turn, it's going to happen one, like, once every five turn, every three turn, then this guy is going to, like, this like, battle for number one is on. That's why it's actually so cool to me, because Vitality has Zywoo in position to get this spot again, if they can be in these semis and finals. Yeah. Spirit, by the way, still looks more than good enough to do it. And then, obviously, Monacy, even though his team team's actually been a bit sauce. The joke is he's the one where the team should be holding back. They've just had this run recently, so he's had the chance to do it. So actually, the actual battle for that, like, number one, it could actually be the best one we've ever had, because the other ones were just Ziwu and Simple. And, like, even when they were, like, the real problem is, even though, like, on paper you were supposed to include Device against Simple, no one really did. Everyone was just more sort of like, is there a reason not to give it to Simple in those years? So this year you actually do have the real battle where the players themselves, this is the coolest part, the players will basically decide who gets to win it. It's not going to be from us coming up with some angle. It looks like it'll just be based on how many tournaments you get to, how many deep runs you do. But on the Spirit side, I am a tiny bit concerned about Spirit the team though, Maniac. And it goes like this. This is why I actually do think it was so paramount for them to win that PGL Copenhagen major, because the high they were coming off after that kind of eats it. No one cared about that RMR loss to Mouse. Like, that was just, as long as you qualify, I think for RMR, as long as you qualify, no one really cares. You can even come 3-2. As long as you're like a sick team, people forget about it the second you get to the major. The reason why I think it was so important to win that major is because it's not only that they were at like the peak of how they've looked, and they're still a very good team, but mate, that like fear factor isn't there anymore. I think teams actually at that moment were scared to play them. I think if you were someone like FaZe Clan, if they get smashed like that, you looked at some of the other squads, like, I think a lot of teams were looking at them like, fuck it, is this actually just the best team? Like, they looked really scary. I mean, even people like Shiro looked super strong. Obviously, Zontix, like, that made a name for himself in Katowice. Like, none of these players have been bad. Like, the joke is, maybe everyone's playing at, like, I don't know, 80% of that level. They're still really good. They're still obviously relevant. They're in all these tournaments. But, like, the fear that that team's going to, like, dominate, see it, that has gone now. Now they're just a good team. So I, even though I wouldn't change any players, obviously I'd ride it out till the next major, see what happens, etc. I still think they could go on to be one of the all-time great teams. The sexiness of the story, the idea they're going to like romantically just have the first era of like a rookie squad, on that's not going to happen now. So sadly that part has, that's weird. So where are you at on Spirit, Maniac? Where are you at on this one?
I know you're right, but also like, didn't we just set ourselves up for failure thinking that this was a probability after what happened in Katowice? Like, already Katowice in itself felt like some sci-fi book.
Twilight Zone episode. Yeah, of course. Yes.
Exactly. Like, we were in the upside down. Like, this whole kind of Katowice run was just like, okay, surely this stops here. Okay, surely this stops here. Oh, actually, no, it doesn't stop.
It's why when he had those numbers in the final, and it was like, if anything, you were hoping, right, Donk's numbers in the final just wouldn't be, like, too bad to tank, like, the overall stats. And then they were, like, even better or whatever. It's like, I guess there's no rules apply anymore. Just up is down, like you say, like, fucking hell. Okay.
Exactly. I mean, if they really had just immediately just won the major and kept on going, then what, we would have just witnessed, like, a phenomenon never happening Counter-Strike.
Yes.
It was just, for me, the question was always going to be, okay, when they actually start to hit the brakes and struggle a little bit, then what are they made of?
I think this was always
the question for me. If you're really being thorough with what happened to Spirit right now, you basically have a loss in against FaZe at the major with like an incredible third map that goes all the way to overtime. So sure, it hurts to lose, but also I don't think anybody's really pointing fingers. I know Zontix had a complicated game on that map 3, and it's pretty easy to pick and choose like who you attack, but as a whole, it's not like, oh, the major is a fail, they absolutely fluked their way out. No, absolutely not. Like, they lost an incredible third map to FaZe. Now the game versus Vitality is a little different. It's a little different because they really did look outclassed. Although I will say, and there is something that we haven't really discussed yet in this episode, and I think is worth mentioning, is that for teams that are supposed to have a very strong map pool and that's supposed to be their way in into this best of threes, this was one of the most fluid, weird situations ever for a map pool at an A-tier tournament. Like, it's just never happened before. The fact that you have Dust2 being brought back in very closely to the event, and then you have Vertigo being changed so that nobody really wants to mess with Vertigo. This was basically an event with like a 5 map pool, unless you were ready for Dust2.
Yes.
So I think that in itself, it probably like threw really a wrench in the whole situation.
By the way, also probably worth pointing out in this context, to be fair, Team Spirit has looked like one of those teams that needs a lot of prep. It's actually why I personally was a critic of them calling the Vertigo bluff. I thought you should have just gone with them absolutely prepped on, you know,
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the topics we would always cover when we talk about Spirit. It's like, oh my God, they have such good executes and their retake protocols are so refined and the way they move together, wow. This was more like the Far West. Like, this was the good, the bad, and the ugly then. You know, it's like, let's see how this goes. So I'm ready to extend them like an olive branch in that regard. But on the Donk topic, maybe we have a tendency to forget that he is still a very new kid on the block. Like, what kind of incredible standards are we holding him up to?
We've ruined him.
Are we doing the same to him that we did to Monesi his first year? Where like, anytime Monesi would have one bad game or won by the event, we would say, ha, absolute wash, he's a fraud, like, he's been overhyped, whatever the hell. And now we see where Manasi is now. So if I'm going to extend a little bit of tolerance towards Zaiwu and give him the time to find his marks, I mean, Doak's been here for like 2 days.
Yes.
Like, what the hell? The question is not whether or not he would never have a bad series, because he did have a bad series. Like, you say, if this is the floor that's acceptable, I would say for his talent, that's below acceptable. But granted, I think it's going to be exceptional. But the question is not whether or not that was going to happen. The question is, where does he go from there? Like, this is what makes it interesting. This is what makes, like, actual profiles of the game become interesting. Like, hey, you showed up the next event.
Makes Cologne a lot more interesting, I'll tell you that
much. Oh, my God. Holy shit.
Yes, Cologne, good run at Cologne, yeah.
And we had, like, the camera shots against Vitality, and, like, he was slapping the desk. Like, he was visibly, visibly shook.
Yes.
Maybe this is not usual for him to actually get styled and have people just white swing on him and shit. Yeah, okay, that happened. That's fine. If people are using this series versus Vitality to say that Donk was never supposed to be a great player, then they don't understand Counter-Strike. It's just, I mean, you either have an eye test to the game and you know he's exceptional, or if you really think this is the end of the hype, then he should have never been there in the first place. So my hypes and expectations around Donk are still very much there. I just wonder how he's going to behave after that. Yeah, humbled a little bit. You know, it's a good opportunity for you to reflect on, like, whatever emotions you were going through. You're still a kid. Most of that team is still kids.
Yes.
Chopper is, like, basically the dad of four kids around him, basically, with Majix being treated as a veteran when he's, what, like, 21 or 22 or something, so extremely young anyway. So, come on, like, let's give them a break. Let's give them a break. But I do agree with you. The whole, like, spell of, oh, my God, Spirit is unbeatable. Watch out, Spirit rolled out in the tournament now. They're about to smash everybody. Well, no, we're not there anymore. But that makes the whole scene even more interesting. Oh, like, you have tournaments coming up, and then you have Spirit, you have FaZe, you have Vitality. Oh, who's going to win? And then obviously that's the moment G2 decide to win with the standing, which, by the way, I'm sure we could take 30 minutes on this episode to talk about it, because the implications are so juicy. But anyway, like, I think the scene in Counter-Strike in terms of players and teams right now is so tasty. Like, oh, it's so great.
No, one thing I actually think is, I'll contrast it with, like, I'd say, like, late 2022 into 2023, the era when the notorious Hooksy took over in G2 and won all those events. One of the reasons why people like me and Richard still flamed the scene is, I actually thought, like, the top teams were kind of a bit weak at the time, actually. Everyone was, like, super, like, you could tell almost every team was going to make a roster move or needed to make a roster move. Here's the difference. Right now, the teams at the top have flaws. Like, there's no dominant team that's going to smash everyone. But I actually think that they're pretty fucking good, though, because the flaws are all different. Like, for example, maybe G2 has an issue with firepower or something. Well, the problem with some of the other teams is, like, Mouse has an issue with maybe doing it on stage in the biggest match. Like, I think, and Vitality has the Zimu thing going on. Spirit has their own inexperience. Like, if you go, FaZe Clan has won very few events. Like, if you go down the line, I'm with you. Because the teams are all good and they all have star players, it just makes the scene really interesting right now. It's not actually, like, they're not flawed in, like, the crippling sense. It's just in the way that, like, give it a chance. Like, the reason why it works if you have, like, a slight flaw in a top team is because there's a famous saying from combat sports where they say styles make fights. Like, you don't want two players who are, like, identically matched in exactly the same ways, because you'll have a stalemate. You want someone where, in a boxing match, for example, you want the guy where, like, one guy, I don't know, is just sort of, like, I don't know, uses his jab and he just does, like, a standard set, and then the other guy goes for the crazy haymaker knockout or something. It's like, right, which one will win? Will one guy wear the other one down and win on points? Or will the other guy, you know, land the knockout blow? It doesn't matter what happens to the rest of it. You want something like that where there's, like, a factor. In the same way, by the way, I actually do think it is great when you can match up the superstars, etc. But it's cool, isn't it, when one's like an aggressive rifle like Donk, and the other one's like, I don't know, fucking a defensive AWPer or something. So let's flip it over then. Let's do a little bit about G2, because I'm with you, Maniac. I actually think this is an example of where you can tell who actually loves analysis for the sake of analysis, or who just wants, like, narratives and, like, to, you know, essentially to... Here's my like, boomer way of envisioning the nephews, the kids who have all these opinions, Maniac. They're just like delinquent teens that, like, after the game, when, like, Zimu has a bad game, they just put, like, Zimu equals fraud in, like, your spray paint on the outside of the stadium, if you know what I mean. Like, that's all they're doing. It's not like a big philosophical statement. There's not a manifesto attached. There's not a lot of deep thoughts. It's just a statement in many ways, Maniac, and maybe not the product of the most enlightened mind. So what I would say is this. I noticed everyone else took it the other other way. They took this event as like super conclusive, and it's just, you know, it shows that like Hooks, he's a total fraud. He's not even necessary. Nico's actually already the best in-game leader. He just nailed it already. Stewie 2K should probably play in G2. Like, for, holy fuck, like, how were you, Maniac? Like, it's the other way around. There's, it actually asks more questions and gives answers. That's what I thought was awesome. Like, if you ever like talking about like roster construction and all the problems G2's had, this is like the spice. This is like a fucking, someone just put fucking petrol on the fire. It was the flame was starting to go out because we all thought, yeah, there's not enough firepower, literally, in that case. And then like this just fucking made the whole, like, a million potential questions. So where do you want to start? What was the most tasty thing about this initially to you?
Oh, holy shit. Well, the first thing that I had in mind when I saw G2 picking up some steam is that I thought, if I was Hooksy right now, how would I feel? And I think this is a question that's very easy to just meme about and trying to play it cool. Because you can just say, you know what? These are my teammates. I wish them good. I wish them all the best all the time. And sure, I imagine there's a part of you that probably thinks that. Also, that's probably what society wants you to think anyway. That's like the good way to go about it. But if you think about the way G2 actually won, I think this is concerning for him. It is extremely concerning for two reasons. And all of the comments I'm about to make are not statements about how he was or he is doing in G2. It's about how that group was doing without him. And it's concerning for two reasons. First of all, I actually do think that the decisions that G2 and or Nico actually made in money time were very good decisions. I think the way they were able to like sort of find solutions, slow down the game when they needed to against Vitality, then come in with a couple of like quick hits, which obviously they probably didn't even have like the best executes in the world, because you could see we were even trolling about Stewie just trying to find his like angle for the smoke and then the smoke missed twice. So this was far from being like ready. But just by playing sort of fundamentally correct Counter-Strike and making good decisions and good reads, that G2 team actually looked solid as hell on the T side too. Like this was not, I didn't think it was one-sided. I didn't think it was gamble-based. I didn't think it was like irreplicable. But the matter of the fact is they've had a bunch of very long games, a bunch of three mappers all the way in Dallas. And that will obviously test what you're made of on the T side. It's not just that they were styling 13-3 on people. And no, that's not what happened. Absolutely not. So concerning, because tactically speaking, I think Nico made a pretty decent case, or like his ability to make decisions and whoever was coming in with ideas as well, they made a pretty good case. Concerning because Nico individually, out of fucking nowhere, has a once again MVP conversation worthy performance, which I'm just going to go ahead and say never happened in CS2. Like, he was always good. He was always very good. But now in Dallas, he was excellent. Like, he actually was excellent. I think like in the HLTV list, he's probably like the second EVP. So it's like Manasi MVP. Zai was the first EVP. And then Nico is right behind it in terms of like hierarchy, how they built it. So a very strong EVP event from Nico. Apparently not tethered by the fact that he had to at times just like come up with ideas and like micromanage just a little bit. And I was watching them, I was listening to them on the concourse, and he was quite vocal as well. It's not like he was just saying, okay guys, let's do the blue bird strategy, and then he was shutting up. Like, no, he was like a lot of like micromanaging and back and forth. So concerning because he apparently is capable of doing that, and he will frag. And finally, lastly, whatever they were naming this atmosphere shift when Stewie came in, like, oh, you know, we have good vibes and we are enjoying the moment right now and we're all staying positive and we believe in each other and we enjoyed ourselves. What if they start thinking, why didn't we have it before? Why didn't we have that before with the actual lineup that is? And I think this can be very pernicious now, because as it was happening in Dallas, nobody came to Dallas thinking, oh, this is going to be a great application for Stewie and see if he stays in G2. Like, this was never the question. And I don't think it even is the question now. But when you have such a result and you were able to elevate your game that much and be that strong, you would kind of not be doing your due diligence if you weren't thinking about it.
You gotta consider it, yeah.
Exactly. You would just consider, hey, how did we end up being so strong? And what does that tell us about where we were before? And what are the logical conclusions to that? So I do think that now, if that wasn't already the case, they might be the best buds in the world. I do think Hooksy's on thin ice. I think that result undermined him. It undermined him a lot. And I would not wish to be in his position. I think it would be hella uncomfortable right now.
Sure. First of all, when you said, what did he think? Right, I actually addressed this on that Feed the Trolls thing I did with Tech Girl, right? My joke went like this, which is like, look, even though players will always... Look, here's the problem. It's not that like players think one thing or another. Like we can all have multiple thoughts. We can be ambivalent. We can have two feelings at once sometimes, right? So the problem is part of you like is Hooksy the teammate and they're all people you care about and you want to see them succeed. And by the way, you've been fighting so that this team can win a championship all this time. So whether you're there or not, you'd want them to win in a way, but that's also a certain part of you. And that's definitely more of the public side of you, I would say, because all I'll say is one thing I always enjoyed was back in the day, at least when they retire, most pro players in interviews will admit like, oh yeah, I would say like the joke is if you were on North back in the day, when you get eliminated, you're supposed to go, well, I hope Australia wins the tournament. I'll be cheering for them. But the joke is you really just think like, I definitely hope they don't win the fucking tournament because I want to be the best Danish team. I don't want them to keep fucking winning while I'm out the tournament. And, you know, maybe then also, maybe one of them does bad and then they get kicked and I get to join. There's a million reasons why you should. And so part of you, just for human nature, guys, there's a part, like, my joke went like this, Maniac. I actually bet that Hooksy, actually, because he seems so earnest, I bet he was, for real, never even having any dark or cynical thoughts right up until the final. But I'll bet once it was 1-1, he just sort of thought, that's enough now, guys. Just lose. Like, you know, listen, finals is great. Thank you, Stuart 2K. Great job. You know, you've done a lot. But one, can you guys just chill? And two, Zewu, come on, mate. Like, can you just fucking, can we get this done? Like, you know, because you're right. The second that G2 wins that tournament, here's one of the first things I also agree. This actually low-key, what's funny is, this is why I want to stress what I said earlier, though. It's not the, like, Hooksy is shit thing that is now brought up. Like, in reality, he hasn't changed anything about Hooksy. Hooksy's still Hooksy. But the problem you have, I actually agree, is from the G2 players, mate. Because before now, right, let's say you lost a tournament with Hooksy. It's obviously happened many times. They've made a final since they did the JKS with Nexus swap, right? When you lose one of those tournaments, luckily, actually, the thing that plays in Hooksy's favour is pro players aren't actually, this might shock a casual fan, pro players very rarely actually do go like, hey, what the fuck were those strats and calls? Like, most pro players think things like, oh, you missed your flash, or I should have shot this guy, or fuck, what was I doing that 1v1? They think of like simple moments in the game they remember, like, oh, you know, we lost to Deagles when we had a full buy at the end of the game and we could have just steamrolled them. That's the sort of thing they'll normally blame. But in this, so they're never actually going to sit around Maniac and go, yeah, it was a close game. I wonder how, like, Shuhi would have called that instead of Hooks. They're not sitting around doing that. But what's mad is, because they now have actually, through a very weird set of circumstances, being able to win a tournament with Nico IGLing, who crucially isn't Stuart 2K. This would be so different if it was Stuart 2K had called. And the question was, do we want, like, you know, potentially washed Stuart 2K? It wasn't played in years. And that looks like a miracle tournament. Or because the problem now is, if your choices swap to Nico's IGL, which would be the end of Hooksy and the team, just logically. If that's your choice, well, he's already there and he doesn't even have to make that. So there's not even any pressure. So it means at any moment now from this event onwards, you can stop and think after a loss of Hooksy, like, I think I kind of felt better when Nico called that game. You could just have that thought. And if you have that thought, that is the most, I'm with you, it's the most corrosive thought, not least because they win this event with no pressure. And Stuart 2K wasn't even that great, by the way. He was all right. Essentially, it's like, I actually thought people framed it well on Twitter. It's like his strength, basically, you can go look it up. He had like a 35% opening kill attempt, guys. Like, even Hooksy doesn't debate that much. Like, that's ridiculous. If you go look at the event, I can summarize it very simply. Nico's opening kill attempts go way down, and Stuart 2K essentially does what a good stand-in who isn't a top player should do, which is you just be totally selfless. Like, you're literally the bait every time, but you do it in a good way. Like, like I said, I actually think his strength was he knows how to be baited and he did a fucking great job doing it. But I'm with you. If I'm those players, it's not just like, because that whole discussion would be the same for them. Like, who do we get instead of Hooksy? Well, Carrigan isn't coming through that door. You know, fuck, can we even get Snarpeter's kid? You can't. Instead, the real question now actually is, for real, like, if Nico really wants to do that role, it's kind of like, we can do that tomorrow, right? Because I'm with you, Maniac. Yeah. Here's what I'll give Hooksy the credit for. I don't think you can say he had nothing to do with this, because I doubt they threw their whole playbook in the bin. I imagine they were running some things that he worked on before. But the problem, Al, is this, Maniac. Hooksy was never really famous for iconic strats. And in fact, people even said he was supposed to be good at, like, working with star players. Well, I have to tell you, that aspect of just calling on the flight, Nico looked really good at, guys. I've got to say, it's actually the thing I even used to think back in phase he was really good at anyway. Remember, he used to frag out always. It never never affected his game. And in fact, they used to be pretty good. Like, if people don't know, they've won something like, I think they won like three events in FaZe when he was IGL or something. Like, someone said it on Reddit. Like, he's actually won quite a few tournaments and he's had his star players. So I don't even hate the idea if Nico wants to do it, he could do it. But it definitely adds like a little bit of extra spice we never had in this conversation before. Because as we said before, it was always Huxley out and then you're trying to go, is it Chewie? Yeah. Is it Snap? You know, it's always that one. Whereas, how are you? This is actually, I'm not against this idea. It doesn't have to happen, but I think it's interesting. Where are you at on it?
The only thought that I currently have that really just jumped at me right now is when Electronic went from being a player to leader in Na'Vi, the first event he had, he destroyed everyone, everything. I don't know if you remember, that was Lisbon at the time. He had like monstrous rating. He wrecked everybody. And then that left me thinking, oh my God, they figured it out. This is great. I don't think Electronic survived the, you know, from the honeymoon period to, okay, let's actually get down to the nitty gritty. Let's start working on that shit. Let's deal with all of the fucking responsibilities that the leader has to be on a day-to-day basis. I don't think he survived that. So now we have to make the assumption that what happened to Nico's individual level is something that can maintain. That is a very big assumption. But if that assumption is true, because, I mean, the problem is the same way we knew how strong Electronic was, there is no way to deny that it didn't work out when he was the IGL and he suffered from it massively.
Oh, sure.
So do I decide to say that, okay, this is going to be a different story now with Nico, we're not going to follow the same pattern, or do I say we have to be mindful of it? Let's just be hopeful. Let's be optimistic and hopeful for the sake of the conversation. Nico's level can maintain at a very, very high level, arguably higher than he ever was in CS2. The other problem that you have if you're Huxley now is that you're not competing with the pool of IGLs anymore. Like, any stronger anchor, selfless player out there will come for your spot. And there are plenty. There are plenty of people who would absolutely kill just to be the secondary anchor of G2 and being Nico's bait in some of these situations. And you just, all you need is you just have to have someone that's slightly better for people to feel like it's an upgrade. You need to have someone who's maybe coming in with very little expectations, doesn't take a whole lot of space, has a good level. Like, it's like the list of candidates, I feel like if we were going down there, like this could be like a really big pool of people who could contend for that position, and which is a much, much bigger pool than just say, okay, what kind of IGL are we now going to bring to G2, which like all of the really strong profiles are either taken, or you have to make a massive gamble and hope that you've found the new generation IGL, the next Chewie or the next Kixen or something, and you just found one that's like a diamond in the rough, which is not easy at all. So now, if Nico considers becoming an IGL, then suddenly your rivals, as if you're Huxley, they outnumber you. And I think we can both agree that, as you said, if Nico decides to be an IGL, which I hope is not going to be a decision made just based on the euphoria of Dallas. I think this is something that has to be thought through.
Sure.
But if this is the conclusion, Huxley's done.
Yes,
you're not surviving. You're not surviving in that G2 in that scenario. So yeah, that's why I'm saying he's probably in a bit of a pickle of a situation right now. We are making a whole lot of hypotheses. We don't know how Nico is feeling about it, how G2 is feeling about it. But there's reason for concern.
I mean, I'll even add in as well, the other reason why I bring this up is I feel like maybe people have conflated two topics, because obviously the famous thing about Nico is he's done everything he wanted. Like, he's been in the IGL, but he's also AWPed before, if you remember. And I was always really against him AWPing, a bit like I was against Shox AWPing, right? Same reason why, by the way. They can both AWP, definitely. Like, they have some of the craziest highlights ever, both of them. It's just that when you're as good as they are with the rifle, like, you just think, like, mate, just be more versatile. Like, you'll win more clutches, you know? You can move around the map more safely. People don't have to put all the resources into you. Like, there's all these good reasons. So the difference is, I was much more against Nico being the primary AWP, if you remember that Kenny S angle when he first came in G2. I was more against that than the IGL one. The IGL one was more just the idea of, like, FaZe wasn't just the top team when he IGL'd, that's all. Like, it's so many years ago. I think this is where people make too many static judgments on players, Maniac. The player I was critiking IGLing was like in fucking, like, what, like 2019 or something, guys, or 2020 or something. Like, that was ages ago now. Like, in the same way as Device has actually thus far sort of blown us all away with becoming an IGL himself and doing a really good job while still fragging, I'll give that same status. Like, Even though I didn't think Device could do it, I did say if there's anyone could, it'd be him, though, right? He's proven it. He's got so many years of experience. He's a cerebral player. I actually also think the same about Nico. In fact, I'll even throw in one thing someone mentioned, and I thought, actually, they've made a fucking great point there, which is I also feel like, for real, if he's the in-game leader, this might sound like some, like, fucking, what a weird, like, angle to take, but I'm being serious. I actually think if Nico's the IGL, he will actually also, in my opinion, be a bit more responsible with sort of his mood, mate. I don't think he's actually as down of when, like, because, you know, when Nico's the star player, he's probably the most iconic player for, like, the reaction on camera when he fucking dies, yeah, isn't he? Or someone loses the 1v1 or whatever. Even though he's not doing it simple style to, like, BM you. He's just one of those guys who can't, like, hide his fucking emotion, you know, it just comes through. I feel like if you make him IGL, he's also going to be more of, like, a fucking stable figure in that sense, you know. Because that's the other thing I was very impressed by, like you referenced. His own game didn't degrade at all. He's still really fucking good. Like, yeah, maybe he wasn't as aggressive because obviously understandably he's trying to call the fucking game as well. But, like, it actually worked. That's why also, you notice, I didn't at any point in this discussion ever say the stupid thing that a pleb would want me to say. Like, you should actually sign Stewie 2K. Like, no. As Maniac just said there, even if we were going to go down this route of, like, maybe we should cut Hoxie and make Nico IGL, it stops there. Like, those are the two moves we do. We then don't go and sign Stewie 2K. Because here's the thing. Stewie 2K, like, when I said he took, like, 30... He wasn't getting fucking kills. Like, maybe he, like, fit into, like, the system well and did things that aided more. At the end of the day, though, like, CS is still about shooting people with the guns. And as you say, yeah, why would I sign him when I could just sign, like, some shit hot player who actually could just do that but more, you know, and then be even better, can't we?
I'm right with you, but I do think that it might not be Stewie, because I do think there are plenty of other, let's just say, more up-to-date candidates who maybe are sharper. But I do think that there's something about what Stewie was doing that you might want to find and replicate.
Yeah, that's true.
Because if you really look back and, like, if you think about the worst moments of Nico's career, and you think about the numbers and when he's had slumps and all, he's had a little bit of the Zywus symptom of trying too much. Like, holy shit, was he sometimes trying to put his life on the line and take outrageous duels just because you feel like, holy shit, this team isn't working right now. If I don't find this double entry kill, there's no way we're going to win. So he had a lot of these moments where he would force the issue, even in semifinals or grand finals, he would end up having, like, a pedestrian stat. Now, what was happening in this G2, this championship winning G2 in Dallas, is that you have, on one hand, you have Stewie, who's willing and more than ready to give his life for any kind of opening duel or any kind of wide swing. And you have Monesi, who's a bit more reserved, a bit more measured, but will find it, like, 70% of the time or 75% of the time. So now, if you're Nico, you can actually tailor, filter, and choose when you want to make a move, like when you want to call your own number, when you want to try something that you feel like is probably a good thing to do, rather than feeling forced doing it. And I also think, the same way I look at Zywoo, when you have players that have this exceptional caliber, you want to give them mid-round. You want to give them mid-round. You want to let them make a difference with the rest of the pack by how they analyze the game and they find a solution to what's happening and they use the incredible aim just to make sure that they're in the right position. Bam, double kill over. This is where you want to have Nico. There's no reason to just use him as, like, a first duel 30% of the time, because we know how hard it is to be an entry in Counter-Strike unless you have the perfect flash, the perfect setup and everything. Sometimes you're just going to get found. So whatever he was doing, the positions he found himself in, you talk about how he reeled it back in a little bit with entries. Hey, maybe there's something to investigate here. Maybe this is actually where you shine, and when you get some of these, like, mid rounds, and you get a cool little rotation, and you get to be the plus one of a bomb site, or, like, I think this is what he should follow. And you can do that if you have someone that is as aggressive as Stewie in that position. That you can do that. So that's what I would like for Nico if things continue.
I've also got one last angle, which goes like this. There's a concept, right, which is a bit weird, which is in League of Legends, believe it or not, there's been a whole bunch of famous examples of where someone did a role swap, and they played, the famous role is they played AD carry, which is the one that, like, just auto-attacks, basically, and then a lot of them swap and be the lane partner, swap to become a support player instead. And the logic as to why some of them become the best is because, one, if they actually can figure out the role, spots more of, like, a cerebral role, well, because they were AD carry, it's a mechanical role, so you'd have, like, really good mechanics for what usually is a support of traditional cerebral role, so you'd have, like, an advantage there. But more importantly, because I've seen it happen so many times, my theory goes, you sort of know when you were the AD carry what you wanted from your support. Yes. You kind of know how I need to be set up. So the idea is if you can properly process that like paradigm, when you swap over, you could essentially feed and support your set your AD carry up the best to carry. And actually, this is another reason, which I think is a subtle reason as to why I also would potentially be in favor of trying an equal calling experiment. Because when we talked about those past teams I referred to, a Fierce Club where he was like the star player and then he IGL'd because they just didn't have, if you don't know at the time, it's because they simultaneously had too high standards for who can be the IGL, hence why they would just recruit all like legendary players who weren't that good, like Adrian and Neo, and people that were like at the end of their career, and the story goes they were even trying to recruit Exist and Flush. Like the joke, I used to make a joke that it looked like every time they needed an IGL, Nico and fucking Yanko just pulled up like the HLTV top 20 players for 2016 and just went down from the top. That was my joke. It's a pretty good one, because if you look at like who, you know, or 2017 or whatever, if you go look at who they were recruiting, it's like, what are you doing here? So anyway, when they were doing that, that was the era when Nico was the best player on his team. So the other problem you have then is you're into blame F territory, which is you don't really want the IGL calling totally around himself, because then, you know, other people are going to get lost. Like, what's going to happen to the system? What the structure is? The reason why I think it could be better now is because Nico isn't even the player he was in FaZe. In FaZe, he was more of like the god lurker. People remember this. Like, he was like the guy where, like, you could see why he was better suited to be a secondary caller, because typically that player isn't with the entry pack. You want them to come and win the clutch at the end. All these reasons as to why it's trickier. Now, Nico's more of like a fucking aggressive player in CS2 and more latter-day CSGO. It's actually what changed when he came to G2. It's one of the things I think he's leveled up in his game. He's a very different player. So first of all, he's got a more applicable role to be IGL. And then the point I was making about the support angle is, I get the feeling for real that Nico does understand what it's like to be fucking Modesty, because he was that guy. He knows what it's like to be the best player potentially in the world and be hard carrying, but sometimes teammates let you down or they frustrate you or they don't work the right. So I actually think as well, they not only have this relationship, but I actually think if there's anyone could understand how to maximize like Monacy's game and help him go to the next level. Because here's another thing I immediately think to myself. If Nico was the IGL, wouldn't you basically be grooming Monacy to just say like, mate, you become a secondary voice in our team. Like if you want agency in the map or something, like, you know, if you have like a play you want to go for in the mid, just let us know. You tell us and we'll make it work. So I also think that aspect could really work, because the reason why it's OP is, you said it earlier, but let's make it explicit. If Nico became the IGL, first of all, your IGL is going to be extremely skilled compared to almost any other IGL in the game. And then secondly, the player I recruit to replace Huxley, who then wouldn't be an IGL, bro, we could just have the team that wins the major right there. If you recruit a really skilled player who can do the things we want, like get traded, etc., wouldn't that already be like a major winning team at that point in time? Be a pretty spicy prospect, right? And people have mentioned this. I want to get this as your last take, Maniac. It is alluded, if you look at like not only that weird news about Monacy that came out, like maybe he's going to go to a different team, but like people have pointed out many times, in theory, some of the contracts should be run out soon. I get the sense that even though G2 has never said anything publicly, I don't think this is a project they think is going to run for another year with this lineup. I think they know it's going to blow up at some point, or you're going to make some changes. So what are your thoughts going forwards? Like, do you think they just ride this to the Shanghai major and see what happens there? What do you do? What are your
honestly
thoughts?
I feel like prior to Dallas, there was a consensus about the need for changes in G2. This is the sense that I was getting, right, like the feeling I was having watching them play. And I do wonder if that victory changes that, and like in what kind of way it changes that. Because I think what's happening is we might have gone from fuck this is doomed, like this is at its root, it's absolutely doomed, you know what, let's just maybe blow it right up and see what's going to happen, to hold on a minute, maybe we're holding on to something that is incredibly valuable here and we could probably build around that. I think this might be what was happening, because if you remember, like all that noise, I don't know how much of it was real, but I tempt to think that whenever there's smoke, there usually is a fire somewhere. So all that noise around Monacy probably moving.
It can't be nothing there. There's got to be like, there had to at least be some sort of thought or conversation,
exactly,
right?
Like, yeah. There had to be a little bit of some legs to stand on. So now, had that happened in the past, this was over. Like Monacy, or rather G2, and I make the joke here, but Monacy was G2 for a long time, and he was being weighed down and arguably wasted his incredible talent in there. So had he gone, like, I think this was it. Like you had to, if you were Nico at this moment in time, you lose Monacy, you just try and fend for yourself. You say, fuck it, I'm going to try and find something different. But now, if this tournament is what makes Monacy look at Nico and think, hold on a minute, there might be something here. Like this wagon right there, I might want to just attach myself to it and keep going. Because okay. I know I like the way you call. I like the way you play. You're basically, it looks like Modesty look at Nico like he's an absolute role model in life in Counter-Strike, which fair enough as well. Why wouldn't he? So if Nico had just managed to make sure Modesty just stays with him, now, of course, you can just improve. I think Hunter topic is a complicated one because he obviously struggled in the last few months. I don't think there's an argument to be made against that. He had a few like banger games, incredible moments. The start of Nuke against Vitality is a good example. Like his T side is fucking monumental. Oh, like sure. He's got 13, 14 frags. He's the one that basically puts G2 in a commanding position, moving on to the second half. So like big game players. He kind of, I don't know if it's like a rain syndrome in phase where if there's a moment you start thinking, yes. would it be time to upgrade? Would it be time to upgrade? Bam, he just hits you with like yes. a big game in playoff and you just think, oh shit, like this is invaluable. Like maybe we can't really remove him. So let's just extend him the courtesy. Then right behind, if all you want to do is find stronger anchors, then obviously the minus Hooksy plus someone would be obvious. You can probably even start a conversation about Nexa. Like, are we going to like pretend yeah. and stand here? Like if you look at the stats, they're so top heavy for G2 in Dallas. Of course. So top heavy. It's incredible. Like the variance, like the standard deviation from winning the team is so incredible. You could probably ask yourself the question too. But I do think that the Hunter Nico Modesty, if this is actually a pattern that can work, Nico has an IGL, you don't touch it. Like you hold on to it for dear life. Until the end of Counter-Strike, if you can. And then maybe you try to upgrade the rest.
I'll make one final point, but it's not really like a point. It's not an analytical point, guys. It's just, I'm going to plant the seed for a beautiful narrative. That isn't, by the way, it's years away. It's probably not going to happen now, but I'm just going to plant the seed today anyway. So way back in the day, I remember... You remember back in 2016, Maniac? That was when, if you remember, we'd just come off the year of Kenny S being like the best player when he was like cracked out before the AWP nerf, etc. in 2015, and he was in Titan when he was obviously playing with you. And then in 2016, they had that thing where they kicked Existence out of G2, and then suddenly Shox became the agile, but he became insane. If everyone remembers, he was like one of the best players in the world again. He was like exactly everything you wanted from Shox, the rifle. I remember that EPL he had against Luminosity where he was like every fucking clutch, like every like amazing like triple kill that he needed. And at the time, I remember, I forget which event, but it was an event where I was at, and then Semler goes like, hey, you did like one of those, like, you know, to get your attention. He goes, and then when he pointed, right, I looked down the bar, and down at the bottom of the bar in this event, I saw Kenny S and Shox, just Kenny S and Shox only, having like a drink and talking like that kind of a talk you have when you're just like broing out where like, first of all, because they're French, they were drinking like wine or something ridiculous like that at a fucking bar, not like a beer or something, you know, vodka Red Bull or whatever. Because they're French, they were drinking red wine, like ridiculous cliche. But they were doing that thing where you don't just talk to the other person. You talk to them and both of you have got like your arm around like that. Like mm-hmm. this, like,
yeah. Yeah, I know the one.
And like they were having that convo where even though we couldn't hear what they were saying, obviously in our minds they were just going like, yeah, can't carry these guys to the win, kind of. You're telling me, I tell you what, fucking it was harder in the AWP last year, you know, Maniac and Existence and that, you know, they're having the harder times. And you're, if only there was some sort of a solution to our problem. You all you want is them to just do that bro fist anime moment, like, I need you, you need me, you know, like, let's fucking dominate together. So all I'm going to say is this, no one's thought this through, Maniac, because of the way contracts work now and teams work. And I even think people in their brain think of Modesty and they don't think of him as Russian because he's in G2. They just think of him as an international player. I'm just going to put this out there, guys. Donk and Modesty are both Russian. They don't in any way play the same role or style. And I actually also think if you look at what Shiro does with fucking Donk, bro, if you put these two players together, if Donk and Shiro played together, mate, forget about it. Like, CS is over. Like if they, essentially, all I'm going to put out there is this, if you're from G2 or any org that isn't Russian, you must stop these two. Like, it's like the fucking matter and antimatter part. You must never let them meet or in any way talk. Because if these motherfuckers ever figure it out, maybe I can do the sort of like, let's do this shit together. It's over. Like, these two, they could roll for like 10 years, bro. This could be like the end of CS.
You don't need to tell me that.
It's like fucking Infinity War or something.
I would lie if I said I've never had a fantasy.
It sounds sexy, doesn't it? Fucking, it's a pretty cool one, isn't it?
I had the fantasy of fucking Zywoo and Modesty playing together.
That's like, a banger too. Yeah.
Like these, because the fact that Zywoo could just be like a secondary AWPer, he doesn't want to be a main AWPer anyway. Why not? Leave me on the rifle. No, I agree with you. I think for the sake of Counter-Strike, we can never let these things
happen. You probably shouldn't let it. It's like Messi and Ronaldo playing together. They probably should be in separate teams to make the stories.
Sort of like authority of sport, like fair play.
You've got to have like a quarter. You can't have two of those at once. I agree. I agree.
Exactly. But I mean, yeah, listen, this would be absolutely fucking bonkers. And who knows, like years from now, I mean, it doesn't have to be that far away.
No.
I do think like, Donk is probably going to ride it out with Spirit for as long as he thinks that they can win trophies. But if there ever is a time where he actually realizes that it's not going to happen, possibly like in the hypothesis, then yeah, why not? Like there are a lot of people out there with money to splash, maybe, hopefully. Who knows where the economics of this world are going to go? It's not the best of time right now, but who knows? Like a greener future where people have a little bit to splash around. This would actually be absolutely crazy. Yeah, I mean, and also Donk is like the Stewie 2K that actually finds the kill.
Like that would be insane, wouldn't it?
It's the 30% attempt with like 60% success. Yeah. So it's like, all right, fair enough. This would actually break the whole thing. You probably would have to dance around a little bit on the CT side.
Sure.
So you need to give Donk whatever he wants. That would probably need some fine tuning. But you know what? If I had a good glass of red wine right now, I would allow myself to just romanticize about it. Hell, I might just do it later today.
Of course.
Sip it and just think about it.